I'm Julie Burstein. I'm here for Leonard Lopate. Up now, we're going to look at the plans that the Haitian government unveiled yesterday at the UN for the comprehensive rebuilding of their quake-ravaged land. Countries around the world pledged over $5 billion in aid yesterday to help the Haitians and to make that plan a reality. It's ambitious and long-range. There was a fascinating article about it yesterday by the New York Times architecture critic. The plan is designed by urban planners, and it attempts to move people out of Port-au-Prince and into other smaller Haitian cities. Joining me now to look at the pressing current needs in Haiti and the plan to rebuild it are John Bell. He's a founding partner of the architectural firm Beyer Blinder Bell, where he directs the design of projects in sensitive urban areas. And Mr. Bell is working on preliminary plans to rebuild the Ciné Institute in Jacmel, Haiti, which is south of Port-au-Prince. We're also going to be talking to Alan Mansky. He is currently the head of the International Rescue Committee programs in Haiti and senior coordinator of its emergency response team. Alan joins us from Haiti to describe the current challenges that Haitians and aid workers face. And he is by phone, and there may be a little bit of a lag time, so please bear with us. But it's wonderful to have both of you on the Leonard Lopate Show today. Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
Alan, the rainy season.
Thank you,
Julie. The rainy season, and there is that lag, so I'll have to be aware of it too. The rainy season, not to mention the hurricane season, starts this month. But in February, heavy rains created severe flooding in Port-au-Prince. Have aid organizations been able to figure out ways to provide people with shelter that's protecting them from these kinds of natural issues?
Yes, Julie. Yes, progress has been made. It's been slow in parts, but just a few days ago, plastic sheeting and tents are being distributed. But we all acknowledge that more is required. And with the wet season fast approaching, replacement sheeting, plastic sheeting and tents is also going to be needed. At this stage, we're putting in place contingency plans for not just the wet season, but also the hurricane season. So we're actually ready as an organisation to be able to address some of those needs. But there are serious concerns for all relief agencies here on the ground.
Are those the biggest issues that the aid organisations are facing, or are there other issues on the ground that you're really wrestling with 2.5 months after the quake?
A lot of the needs are being addressed, and I'll qualify that by saying that yes, it is a slow progress, and there's many reasons behind that. We do face constraints in many areas, but water is now more readily available in some of the settlements. The sanitation services which were not so much in existence before the earthquake, are being addressed. But we still need many more latrines and bathing facilities, not just in Port-au-Prince, but also in the rural areas. And these include schools and health facilities. So that's a massive task in itself. Progress is being made on the reunification of children. And this is still a major issue here on the ground, that we need to put more resources into being able to identify separated children now before they become subject to trafficking or abuse. The other downside here is the increase in sexual violence since the earthquake, and the general security situation itself has deteriorated. That's creating a sense of instability for the whole population, but more so those affected and living in cramped conditions in some of these settlements.
How are aid organizations addressing those needs? Which you're there for food and shelter, but when things like sexual abuse happen, how can you on the ground deal with those sorts of things?
Just on that particular issue, we're working with women and girls affected by sexual and domestic violence here. Women's organizations were in existence before the earthquake, but have been severely affected by the impact of the earthquake itself. So we're working directly in the settlements in providing some of these services and awareness campaigns. But we're also trying to assist with re-establishing some of these women's organizations through partnerships so they can get up and running and can be used as referral services for our direct delivery.
John, I want to turn to you now. Alan just mentioned the need for schools and hospitals, which are two things that are addressed in the plan. The immediate needs are so dramatic and so great in Haiti. As you look at plans for rebuilding, I wanted to ask you, as an architect and a planner, how do people balance those such pressing immediate needs with the sort of long-term goals when plans are being put out for the rebuilding of a country?
Well, I think you have to work on both things simultaneously, both the immediate needs and the long-range plans. And, of course, that's a particularly difficult thing to do in facilities like medical facilities, which have such stringent requirements. But there's no way around it. You have to do it from the beginning and do it very conscientiously. There are structures that are so-called temporary structures, but which have a degree of permanency that hopefully could withstand some of these climatic conditions. And those are the facilities that one should start building. In the way of schools, clearly one of the biggest problems is that since the earthquake, the Haitians, understandably, have had a great fear of going back into buildings, worried that, in fact, another earthquake is on the way. So there's a level of education and psychological learning that has to be done that I think the medical community could help with.
Yesterday, the UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said, quote, "What we envision today is wholesale national renewal, a sweeping exercise in nation building on a scale and scope not seen in generations." John, in your experience, have you seen that kind of large-scale planning work in a city or in a country after a disaster?
In truth, no. But it's such an enormous scale, I don't think that's a surprising answer. What I was reflecting back on when I was thinking about the impact was the impact that I have personal experience with was World War II, mm-hmm. where the devastation from the bombing in whole cities in small areas totally wiped out communities. And that is the most devastating thing that I've had personal experience with. In that instance, it was a matter of trying to recreate an acceptable living environment as soon as possible, so that people could get back into their homes. But for a while, there was a tremendous dislocation of the population while that was being done. I think in Haiti, that's unavoidable, and the Haitians have experienced a great deal of that already. So it's a very delicate matter. You want to give them hope. You want to give them reassurance that you're working towards permanent residence for them. But at the same time, you don't want to be in such a rush to satisfy those needs that the end result is not acceptable.
Alan, from your experience there on the ground in Haiti, how is this balance being met between, as what John was talking about, those sort of urgent, immediate needs, and then also the idea that perhaps something can be built that will sustain people for a long time?
Yeah, it's a good point. I've just addressed the urgent needs at the moment. And yeah, we don't have much before the wet season is upon us, or the hurricane season for that matter. So yeah, our focus as a relief organisation is to address those immediate needs. Yeah, but in another consideration here with the long-term rebuilding of Haiti, there's many other things that need to be put in place before we start talking about rebuilding structures. Just the roads themselves, yeah, they're narrow and congested here, which is making it difficult for aid agencies to be able to deliver aid. So that's one consideration. The second one that, and this has come up in many discussions just internally with my colleagues, is the fact that, yeah, we can put in place plans to build earthquake leak-proof structures. But yeah, whether the money is going to be there to be able to do that, not just at the institutional level, but also at the individual level, I'm not convinced about that. And I think it's good that we have these plans in, but they need to be reasonable and achievable by the people here who are going to be rebuilding.
So it sounds like infrastructure needs are tremendously great, also for roads. And I think you also talked about just places where people can bathe and where people can cook.
That's correct, yeah. And as I said, this goes back to the immediate needs, which the International Rescue Committee is trying to address at the moment. Yeah, we're working in many settlements building these structures, but we know that these are temporary. This will get people up until the wet season or beyond the wet season. And the reason why there's such a rush to get this done, especially the sanitation service and hygiene promotion, is to prevent any outbreak of disease during this period. Further down the track, when it comes to the planning and moving people either back to rural, not forced relocation, but trying to encourage people back to rural areas, then that component of rebuilding needs to be taken into consideration, because a lot of these people here didn't actually have access to sanitation services prior to the earthquake, or even running water for that matter. So it's a big problem, and I don't actually have the answers to it, and I don't actually envy those who are tasked with that chore.
Well, I would like to offer a suggestion that is not a huge solution, but I think is a step in the right direction. And that is that even though the first need is to provide as many temporary structures as one can do, that doesn't mean that we should erect them and place them on sites in such a way that the environment, both in and around those tent communities, is wholly unacceptable. And if you look at many of the photographs of the settlements coming out of Haiti, the tents are very, very close together. There's hardly any open space. There's no communal activity. It's a very, very minimal living environment. And that's not necessary. It would be much better if using some good site planning and landscaping skills, those tented communities were laid out with some more space where outdoor activities could happen. Climate in Haiti most of the year is conducive to living outdoors. There are many activities that could be placed outdoors, including, by the way, schools. Class could take place outdoors. So it's not hopeless. It's really setting the right standards from the very beginning and moving in a direction which goes from a temporary to a permanent environment.
And this, as a planner yourself, John, and as someone who has seen projects from the beginning to the end, Alan raised something which I thought is always a pertinent question, which is about money. How can the international community look at planning, and are there ways to look at design and keep people's focus on this after the immediate needs are met?
By making reasonable deadlines and creating fair budgets. And if you get the deadlines and the fair budgets right, you're starting on the right way to build a successful project.
Alan, you mentioned one of the things that is a centerpiece of this plan, which is trying to move people from Port-au-Prince, the main urban area, into other areas that would be centered around schools and hospitals and things like that. From your experience there over these past few months, does that seem like something people would be open to and eager for? Or is that just talking about that kind of movement going to be a challenge?
No, I don't think it would actually take a lot to convince many people to actually leave Port-au-Prince and return to their rural areas. But this sort of comes back to the infrastructure I was talking about earlier. People are not going to move back to rural locations or their former place of residence if there's no employment, if there's no education, if there's no health facilities. And I know that this is all part of the new planning for Haiti. But until that sort of happens, yeah, there is no pull there for people to leave Port-au-Prince at the moment. While, you know, unemployment levels in Port-au-Prince still remain very high, there is still far more opportunity for them to be able to earn even a small living here. So, yeah, it's not an easy solution to this, but, this plan itself, but starting with the roads, getting the roads in place and built so as industry can move out to some of these rural locations and attract and track that population for employment.
Decentralization is really a key policy decision that really has to be implemented. And once you've implemented that, then the next step is to define what can be done long range and what can be done short range. And there are many projects which could be done on a short range basis that would show progress towards a more acceptable living environment. And I think that there has to be a careful analysis of the situation to come up with the right mix of long-range and short-range and decentralized projects.
And John, you're involved with an arts organization that's outside of Port-au-Prince. What is it like in that city? And is it Jacmel? Is that the name of the town that the arts organization is?
Are you talking about Cine Institute?
Yes.
Yes. Well, Jacmel was a wonderful town with great history, some fine, simple buildings, and of course it was very badly hit in the earthquake. One of the organizations that occupied some of those buildings was an organization called Cine Institute, founded by David Bell.
Who happens to be your son.
Who happens to be my son and has been living and working in Haiti for 10 or more years now. Cine Institute is founded on a very simple premise, which is Haitians have great visual and artistic skills, and if they were translated into modern technology, such as filmmaking, they would become very productive and useful members of Haitian society. The first class from Cine Institute was graduated this summer, and it was beginning to really show great progress. Sadly, it was totally destroyed in the earthquake, and fortunately nobody was killed, but they are back in business. In fact, they were back in business minutes after the quake hit, because they were the students who filmed the first films from the earthquake that were seen on worldwide television. That's an indication of the determination of Haitians and their ability to work on solving their own problems. We should be supporting them in whatever way we can to do that and build their own future in that way. Cine Institute is a small but very, I think, good example of the right sort of combination of outside skills and inside determination.
Alan, we just have a minute left, but as you look around you, do you feel that things have changed in the time that you've been there? Are you feeling a change for the better in the situation that is ahead, is in front of you?
Yes, Jude, they have. Yeah, like, again, I'll go back to the fact that progress is slow, and for many reasons, we do face a lot of constraint on the ground. But it is happening. For the future, though, our immediate concerns are being able to continue to address these particular needs that I mentioned earlier. I just want to point out sort of one thing before Sean left the line, and that was just a consideration for land tenure here in Haiti when it's planning. 70% of the population in Port-au-Prince rented their properties. Some sort of considerations there were in any new plans to address that.
You were breaking up a little bit. So 70% of people rented their properties, and I don't know. And John, do you know whether in the plan
70% in Port-au-Prince?
Whether anything in the plan addresses that people are renting and that they don't own where they live?
I'm afraid I haven't had a chance to look at the plan in that much detail.
But, Alan, do you think that would that's an important piece of this, that people, if they were owners rather than renters, that things might change?
I think they would, because people would go about rebuilding, you know, on their properties, and they would have some sort of proof of tenure to that land. At this stage, you know, there's many government ministries that were destroyed. You know, people lost birth certificates, identification cards, but also titles, title to the land that they had. But you know, more importantly, 80% of these people, you know, were in rental properties. Now, until those rental properties are rebuilt in Port-au-Prince, they will remain displaced, or they'll return to rural areas if that opportunity affords them. So it's just a key consideration, I think, in the rebuilding of Haiti, and more so Port-au-Prince, that needs to be looked at.
That's an important point. Well, I wanted to thank both of you for joining me today to talk about what is happening in Haiti right now and what is envisioned for the future physically in terms of infrastructure and building in that country. I've been speaking with Alan Mansky, who is in Haiti. He is the current head of the International Rescue Committee program in Haiti, and he is in Port-au-Prince, and John Bell, who is the founding partner of Beyer Blinder Bell. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Julie.